Good morning on a beautiful May 8th. This is Jane reading the News Gazette to you, and we're going to start with a very seasonal story. It's all about graduation right now, isn't it? This is from Mohammed Seymour High School. The headline reads, "So excited, it's ridiculous. Senior class president is not super nervous ahead of graduation speech." Mohammed Seymour High School senior class president Julia McPherson doesn't mind speaking in public. She knows, however, that Friday night's event will be a little bigger than anything she's done before. McPherson will be the evening's final student speaker for her school's commencement services. The venue, State Farm Center. That's quite a bit larger than anything in Mohammed. "I'm not super nervous about public speaking, but there is pressure to be the last speaker and tell everyone to turn their tassels. I'm so excited, it's ridiculous." Principal Chad Benedict said he knows McPherson will do well. "She's pretty dynamic," he said. Benedict said 249 students will be walking during the 7 p.m. ceremony. Some students who are graduating have chosen not to participate in the ceremony. Talented is the word Benedict used to describe this year's graduating class. "When you look at the things that this class has done academically and in the extracurricular activities, what they've done to help serve others kinds of stands out as well," Benedict added. He feels good about the future when he considers this year's graduating class. McPherson, who is 18 and headed to the University of Kentucky this fall, where she will major in community leadership and development, has grown up with a desire to help others. Her goal is to work with nonprofits or in underdeveloped areas of the world or communities. She said she has spent a long time working with people with disabilities. That has transformed into considering how she can help the most people. The basis of McPherson's speech is the idea that in school we're ranked and stacked against each other and in numerical categories. But it's important not to get caught up in that. Instead, just focus on being a good human and not a statistic, she says. McPherson lives in Mohammed and said she enjoys the community and the support people give one another. "How fun home games are across all sports, and musicals and concerts, and to see the people that show up and cheer each other on." Among her other activities, she has been 2-time varsity captain for color guard and marching band, a member of student council, a mentor in the freshman mentoring program, statistician for varsity baseball, and a member of the drama club. McPherson has also assisted with the school's Compass and Atlas programs for special needs children, of which her older brother is a part. She has worked at Stevens Family YMCA and volunteers at A Night to Shine, sponsored by First Christian Church. "As our class president, I think she's represented our class extremely well. I think one of the things I appreciate about Julia and her leadership is she is an advocate for all students," says Benedict. He also said she has seen that play out in the various activities and service projects with which she's been involved. There will be 5 speakers as part of the program. McPherson said she will note in her speech that this year's class has one of the largest number of Illinois State scholars, and there are about 40 student athletes who will compete in college next year. Here's another local story. A suspect in a fatal hit and run has also been charged over false documents. And this is Dateline Urbana. A man who has been charged in a hit and run that led to the deaths of 2 young women has been indicted for allegedly possessing documents falsely identifying him as a U.S. citizen. Julio Cucul Bol, 29, a citizen of Guatemala, was charged by a grand jury Tuesday with possessing a false permanent resident card, possessing a false Social Security card, false use of a passport, and making a false statement on a bank application. Bol is currently being detained on local charges of failure to report a crash causing death, aggravated driving under the influence, and reckless homicide for a January 19th incident that led to the deaths of Chloe Polson, 21, of Deerfield, and Katie Abraham, 20, of Glenview, and left three other women with injuries. The federal indictment alleges that on November 10, 2023, Bolt stated that his name was Juan Jaziel Sanz Suarez in an application to J.P. Morgan Chase Bank and that he falsely used a passport. Juan Suarez was the name police initially associated with Bolt after the hit-and-run incident before investigators learned that he was using false documents. The indictment also alleges that on January 19th, Bol possessed a permanent resident card and a Social Security card that were also fakes. The January 19th crash was first reported by a Carle Foundation Hospital security guard who heard it happened on University Avenue around 1:55 a.m., said State's Attorney General Julia Reitz. A red Mitsubishi Outlander had rear-ended a Honda Civic stopped at a red light on University at the intersection with Kohler Avenue. Police obtained data from the airbag deployment controls in each vehicle and confirmed the Honda was stopped while the Mitsubishi was traveling at 78 miles an hour. That's on University Avenue. That's fast. The Urbana Fire Department responded to the scene and removed the five women who were traveling in the Honda. The Mitsubishi's driver had fled, but the vehicle was registered to Juan Sen Suarez and contained Mexican identification documents and Chase Bank paperwork. Two open cans of Modelo beer were in the Mitsubishi's console. Multiple prior registered addresses were listed for Sen Suarez's identity. At one of those locations, police spoke to a friend of the suspect who said they had been out together late January 18th and into the early hours of January 19th. The friend said the pair had gone out to a bar, picked up a pizza, returned to the address in Urbana, and after they ate, each took a Modelo for the road as they went to a second and third bar. At the third bar, the witness said the pair got into an argument that turned physical and led to the fake Sen Suarez being removed by security. The witness didn't see him again, but received multiple calls from him saying that he had been in a crash and needed money to leave the country. On January 22nd, U.S. Marshals arrested a man with Mexican documents under the name of Juan Sen Suarez. He was also carrying pages of handwriting samples, where he appeared to be practicing a signature in that name. Department of Homeland Security agents spoke to the man, who admitted the documents were falsified, and his real name was Julio Cucul Bol. Based on the witness testimony, investigators obtained security footage from all three bars Bol visited, Brothers in Campus Town, an Anthem, and Axe Bar in downtown Champaign. In the course of the night, Bol could be seen drinking multiple mixed drinks and beers. Reitz said he was stumbling in the footage at the Axe Bar before security removed him at 1:39 a.m. January 19th. Footage from outside showed him getting into a Mitsubishi at 1:52 a.m. and driving north on Walnut Street before turning right to head east on University. GPS data investigators obtained from his phone followed the same path. At 1:54 a.m., the phone was at the intersection of University and Kohler before its Bluetooth connection with the Mitsubishi ended, and it traveled to the Urbana address where police met the witness. If convicted of false use of a passport, possession of a false Social Security card, and possession of a false permanent resident card, Bol faces up to 10 years in prison and up to a $250,000 fine. The possible sentence for making a false statement on a bank application is up to 30 years in prison and up to $1 million in fines. The investigation leading to these charges involved the Department of Homeland Security, Homeland Security Investigations, and the Urbana Police Department. Department. U.S. Attorney, Assistant Attorney William J. Lynch is representing the government in that prosecution. Julio Cuculbol, a 29-year-old Guatemalan citizen, suspected in the January hit-and-run that resulted in two deaths, was arraigned on Wednesday on charges related to allegedly falsified identity documents. And he is pictured in that article. Here's some good news for the state of Illinois. A judge blocks Trump administration's order. The state regains access to $77 million in federal education funds. A federal judge in New York issued a preliminary order Tuesday blocking the Trump administration from cutting off states' access to hundreds of millions of dollars in pandemic relief funds to public schools, including more than $77 million for Illinois. U.S. District Judge Edgardo Ramos of the Southern District of New York issued a preliminary injunction blocking enforcement of an order that Education Secretary Linda McMahon issued on March 28th. That order reversed earlier decisions to grant the states additional time to spend funds that had been allocated. The effect of McMahon's order was to immediately cut off access to funds that states said they had already committed to spend, but had not yet made the actual expenditures. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul joined a coalition of 17 states in suing the federal government to block McMahon's order. Quote, "The Trump administration's short-sighted and illegal decision to attempt to rescind already appropriated education funding would hurt vulnerable students the most and could wreak havoc on budgets of school districts throughout Illinois and the nation," Raoul said in a statement on Tuesday. The lawsuit over pandemic-related education money is one of more than a dozen multi-state suits Raoul has joined, in combination with other Democratic state attorneys general, challenging actions Trump has taken since being sworn in for a second term January 20th. In 2020 and 2021, Congress passed several relief and economic stimulus packages totaling trillions of dollars to help individuals, businesses, and state and local governments to deal with the financial consequences of the pandemic. For schools, that included costs associated with preparing for the safe return to in-person learning, addressing the learning loss students suffered during the extended period of school closure, and addressing some of the unique needs of homeless children that were exacerbated by the pandemic. According to the complaint, Illinois was awarded just over $5 billion in education stabilization funds under the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, ARPA, which was enacted in March 2021. Of that, $77.2 million remained obligated but not yet spent as of the end of March 2025. Those funds had been earmarked for such things as teacher mentoring, statewide instructional coaching, new principal mentoring, trauma response initiatives, the creation of social-emotional learning hubs, and contracts for technology infrastructure upgrades, according to the complaint. Under ARPA, those funds were intended to cover expenses incurred through September 30, 2023. Subsequent legislation gave states an additional year to September 30, 2024 to, quote, obligate their funds. And under agency regulations, they had another 120 days beyond that to draw down the funds, although they were also given the option of requesting further extensions. In January 2025, Illinois requested and later received permission to extend its deadline for drawing down the remainder of its funds to March 28, 2026. Other states involved in the lawsuit also received extensions. But on March 28, the Department of Education issued a memo rescinding those extensions, effectively cutting off the state's access to any unspent funds. Extending deadlines for COVID-related grants, which are in fact taxpayer funds, years after the COVID pandemic ended, is not consistent with the department's priorities and thus not a worthwhile exercise of its discretion, McMahon said in a memo to state education agency heads. The injunction means the Department of Education cannot enforce the order, at least while the case is still being litigated or until the court issues a different order. Let's have a look at a few obituaries. Paul Fox, Sr. of Rantoul. On Monday, May 5th, 2025, Paul Fox, a devoted husband to Lori, father of five children, grandpa of seven, and great-grandpa of one, passed away at the age of 78. A funeral mass will be held on Friday, May 9th, at St. Malachy Catholic Church in Rantoul. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that contributions be made to the Henry J. Smith Trust Fund of St. Malachy's School or the Daily Bread Soup Kitchen of Champaign. Next, Rodney Lewis of Charleston. Rodney Wayne Lewis, 72, of Charleston, died on Tuesday, May 6th, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Evergreen Cremation Services in Champaign. Then, Donald Mack of Monticello. Donald Mack, 61, of Monticello, died Friday, April 18th, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Central Cremation Center in Forsyth. Marina Smith, Marina Christine Smith, died on May 4th. She was a beloved mother, daughter, sister, and friend. She was born in Urbana, attended Champaign Central High School, class of 1998, and spent 20 years in sales and office management at Tile Specialist and Service Master. She resided most of her life in Champaign area and recently relocated to Phoenix. A celebration of life will be held Tuesday, May 13th at the I Hotel and Illinois Conference Center from 3 to 6 p.m. Memorial gifts can be made out and mailed to the Rosecrans Foundation in Rockford, Illinois. And that information will be made available at the service. Winifred Steele died on Sunday, May 4th in Rantoul. There will be a private memorial service. They asked to please join her family in sharing memories, photos, and videos on her tribute wall at sunsetfuneralhome.com. Arrangements have been made at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center's Lux Chapel in Rantoul. And finally, Frederick Krang of Santa Barbara, California, formerly of Clinton, died on Sunday, April 27th. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. And here's some news from Springfield having to do with the ongoing issues of immigration. Headline, visit called a publicity stunt. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem bashes Pritzker, speaks with two processed for deportation. 2 hours in the state capitol was enough for U.S. Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem to criticize Illinois immigration laws and its governor while invoking the 2023 murder of a local progressive activist. Her short Wednesday visit largely served as an opportunity for an official from President Donald Trump's cabinet to take photos highlighting immigration policies in a Democrat-run state. Noem visited a Homeland Security office where she briefly spoke with two people being processed for deportation and then held a news conference with family members of people murdered by non-citizens. To illustrate her point, Noem held the news conference on the same block where Springfield progressive activist Emma Schaefer was murdered in 2023. Schaefer was allegedly stabbed by her partner at their Springfield home. She lost her life to an illegal alien that's still out at large, probably in this state, Noem said at a news conference in Springfield. We can't confirm that because the local law enforcement and state law enforcement are barred by state law, with the support of Governor J.B. Pritzker, from sharing any information. The suspect in the case has not been arrested, and Springfield police said last year the man, a Mexican national, may have fled the country. Noem's remarks appalled one of Schaefer's friends, who was protesting near the news conference, and said Schaefer would be advocating for immigrants. Emma Schaefer would have never supported Trump's policies and would have never supported what Kristi Noem had to say, Francesca Butler told Capital News Illinois. Emma would want Kristi to know we should lead with compassion and humility. Noem said she was not in contact with Schaefer's family and was unaware that they were at another site protesting her visit. State Senator Steve McClure of Republican of Springfield said the Republican lawmakers at the news conference did not know Schaefer was going to be mentioned, but you have to mention all the people that have been killed by people that shouldn't have been here. Democratic lawmakers and immigration activists protested Noem's visit outside the governor's mansion and the Capitol building. State law does not protect people in Illinois from deportation. Federal officers under Noem's leadership can still make arrests and deport people in Illinois. Under the 2017 Trust Act signed by Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, Illinois law enforcement is prohibited from arresting a person based solely on their immigration status, and in most cases cannot assist immigration officials with detaining people based on immigration status, according to the Illinois Attorney General's office. This governor has bragged about Illinois being a firewall against President Trump's immigration enforcement agenda, and it is very clear that he is violating the Constitution of the United States because it is a federal law that the federal government set and enforce immigration policies, Noem said. Noem claimed Illinois laws make the state less safe, citing a series of crimes committed by people in the United States illegally. Governors like J.B. Pritzker don't care if gangbangers, rapists, and pedophiles roam free in this state, she said. If they are here illegally, he's going to protect them. Pritzker slammed the visit as a publicity stunt, he said, saying that Illinois complies with federal immigration laws. Trump-Noem publicity stunts do not make our communities safer or our immigration system smarter, Pritzker said in a statement. Illinois doesn't need to abuse power or ignore the Constitution to keep other people safe. Like the millions of Americans asking for sensible, humane immigration reform, I encourage the Secretary to spend less time performing for Fox News and more time protecting the homeland. Pritzker has repeatedly said he supports the federal government deporting people who are illegally in the country if they are convicted of violent crimes. Republicans are continuing to call for the Trust Act to be repealed, unlikely in the Democrat-controlled legislature. These are crimes that the state could have prevented, had the option to prevent them, and decided not to, McClure said. Noem's first stop in Springfield was a federal field office where immigration and customs enforcement officials were processing two men. Noem spoke with ICE officers and one of the two men who were being held in the room while their fingerprints were being scanned. The ICE officer told her that the men were from Guatemala and would eventually be deported because they were illegally in the United States. Noem asked one of the men a series of questions, including whether he was aware he was being detained and would ultimately be deported, and if he had family in Guatemala. He responded yes to both questions. When an ICE officer told Noam that the man had also been charged with battery, she asked him whether he knew what he was being charged for, to which he replied that he did not understand the question. Noam's visit also comes a day after Pritzker agreed to testify next month over the U.S. House Oversight Committee about Illinois immigration policies. The Republican-led committee plans to probe Pritzker, New York Governor Kathy Hochul, and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz about, quote, policies that shield criminal illegal aliens from immigration enforcement, according to a news release. Noam's visit also comes less than a week after Trump's Department of Justice sued Illinois for the second time over state laws aimed at protecting undocumented immigrants. In February, the U.S. Department of Justice sued over Illinois' 2017, quote, sanctuary state law. Last week, the Trump administration sued Illinois again, this time over Illinois' new requirement that employers notify workers whose U.S. employment eligibility is flagged when run through the federal E-Verify system, which compares workers' employment eligibility, federal form I-9, with other federal databases. Illinois law now requires employers to inform workers of their rights to correct their I-9 forms, if flagged by E-Verify, as a possible undocumented immigrant, and of impending worksite inspections from ICE. The feds allege the law disincentivizes employers from using E-Verify and, quote, encourages unlawful employment of aliens in the United States. And since we're talking about Homeland Security, what about that first day of real ID at airports? Most airports around the United States operated smoothly as new real ID requirements took effect on Wednesday, because travelers without the updated documents were still allowed to move through security easily. Those without the IDs were given pieces of paper informing them that they were going forward and they would need to present real ID or other federally accepted ID for air travel within the United States. It includes a QR code travelers can use to see a list of acceptable identifications. The ID you presented is not a real ID compliant, the paper reads. You will need a real ID or other acceptable forms of identification for your next flight, or you may expect delays. Susie Roberts, a traveler who didn't have a real ID, passed through security without a hitch at the Oakland Airport in Northern California. Officials gave her the TSA handout, advised her to call the DMV and to make an appointment, and said she might have to go through extra screening. "I'm going through. They're just going to have to do extra security, and they'll take my photo," Roberts explained, as she waited for her bag to be screened before her flight to Los Angeles. The relative calm at airports was bolstered by the fact that 81% of travelers already have real IDs, according to the Department of Homeland Security. Nathan Carter was one of them. "I feel pretty well prepared. I've had real ID for a while," he said as he prepared to return home to Kansas City from Philadelphia. The new requirement for domestic flights has been the subject of much discussion on social media in recent weeks, with people expressing confusion about whether they can travel without a real ID, sharing details about wait times, and seeking advice on how to meet the requirements. Airport security checkpoints also accepted passports and tribal identification as usual.